What's up, everybody? It's Marshall Couture, also known as Plex of DonkeyJawProjects.com and PlexBeats.com. How you guys doing? I'm doing all right. It's a lovely, rainy, cold, wet Wednesday morning still. And, weather's been fun this week. We had some iciness going on yesterday morning, and then luckily I didn't have to drive too much or whatever, but it was really icy out, and even the little I had to drive just to work and whatnot was, I had a couple incidences where I was slipping around a little bit, and even though I was going really slow, it just happened to be like the perfect amount of like ice and rain, and it just was so slippery, it was ridiculous. So luckily I didn't have to drive for work, but then at the end of the day, I had to drive a big thing that took like about 4 or so hours, and I was like, okay, whatever, I don't care, because, you know, it was just raining by then, it wasn't icy anymore, but I didn't realize where exactly I was going, and if I had known, I would have been like, hell no, I'm not doing that, you know, but, I got, like, partially there and started going up this mountain, and the more I went up, the more snowy it got and more icy it got, to the point where you actually get to the top of the mountain, and it's like a blizzard, like literally a blizzard. Like I was literally worried, and you know, I had to go down the mountain to get to my destination, and it's just like, it was just the worst conditions, and I'm like, am I gonna make it through this? I went super slow, slid a tiny bit at one point, but luckily that was it. I had four-wheel drive, I was in a big truck and everything, so that was cool, but that part was cool, but, you know, still, even in a big truck with four-wheel drive, you gotta be careful, especially in these conditions. It's like really sharp turns and really steep, you know, inclines and declines or whatever, I don't know. So that was fun. And that's how I kind of ended my day. And then when I got, you know, to my destination, it was just raining there. But I knew once I had to come back over this mountain. Like, I was thinking maybe I should just stay here for the night, because this is just, now it's starting to get dark, and I got to go over this mountain again. And luckily, the second time around going back, it was still snowing and stuff up on the mountain. For a lot of the way, but it wasn't quite as blizzardy. Like, for some reason, it was just like a light snowing, and the grounds were covered, but it was a lot more manageable. So I got back and got home safe. Didn't get home till late, but that usually doesn't happen, but whatever, got a little overtime, and Today it's rainy, been driving all day too, so fun. New England weather in the winter. I mean, we haven't even really had snow, but, you know, we had like one instance of snow, and, you know, that was fine. It was certainly manageable. It wasn't bad. But so far, you know, we'll see. So, but, you know, if you go up in a mountain, it doesn't matter. If it's cold and it's precipitation, it's going to be snowing. So, I didn't realize I was going quite there, because we don't go that way very often. So, I should have known, because I have gone there, you know. But it is what it is. I made it through. It was a fun and interesting time. Anyways, So, yeah, today I've just been listening to some more audiobook stuff, and listen to the Bible. There's I was listening to a few chapters of Proverbs. Such good stuff in there, man. It's just crazy. If you don't, if you're not religious, but you might be interested a little bit or whatever, I don't know. I mean, Proverbs is just really cool. Like, it's not even, I mean, there's definitely, like, God talk in there and stuff, but there's a lot of stuff that's just straight up wisdom, you know. It isn't really necessarily, it could be for anybody. And definitely a cool book to, and you take it, there's like in one chapter, if you haven't read it before, there's just like in each chapter, I guess it's called a chapter, there's like, I don't know, like there could be up to like anywhere from like 10 to 25 verses or something like that. And, you know, there's, some of them are longer, some of them are shorter, these verses or whatever, but they're usually like kind of a phrase or something long, like maybe two lines long or something. So there's just like a lot of little nuggets in there of just good wisdom, you know. So I don't know, I get a lot out of it. It's a, when you read it, like when I listen to it, I kind of have to keep pausing it and then taking some time to think about what I just heard, and because it hits you with a lot of just different things that are sometimes not related, sometimes they are related. So, and there's a lot of repetitiveness, well, not a lot, but there's some repetitiveness. So sometimes some of the proverbs will be like almost exact or very similar to another proverb. You know, I don't know how exactly these were written, but I'm pretty sure they were written by Solomon, King Solomon. And so they might have been written like, you know, almost as notes here and there. And he probably went over the same stuff a couple times that was more prevalent. It'd be interesting to find out more about how that all came about, or if there is any wisdom, or I mean any documentation or whatever of that. I would assume it would be, the best sort resource would be within, you know, something within the Jewish religion or something, some kind of text or something might be a good resource to find out about more about that. But yeah, so yeah, Proverbs, really cool stuff. I mean, I've read it over and over and over, and it's just like every time I read parts of it, it's always learning new stuff. You just can't like remember everything, because, and plus it applies to you at different times in your life differently, kind of, or you understand it better, you know, with more experience and things like that. So anyways, so yeah, that, and then when you're, I don't know if I should probably do an affiliate thing to audible.com or whatever, because you know, I'm into just listen. I love audible.com. I download their books all the time. I'm subscribed for one free book. Well, it's not a free book. One book a month for 14, I think it's like $15 or whatever. And so I get the one credit for one book. But when you are a member, you also get the daily Audible email every single day. And they'll have a deal for, you know, whatever book they pick, a book that they pick for, like, usually it's like $3 or less. Sometimes it's even just like $1.95 or something like that. Maybe $5 or less. I don't think it goes, I don't know if I've even seen it go up to $4. I'm not sure. But this one, was like I think it was like $2.95 or something. But anyways, this one was called, and a lot of times their books, they're like fiction books and stuff that I rarely grab, but, you know, The ones I'll grab is either the self-helpy, businessy type of stuff, or, you know, if there's, like, some kind of historical book or, like, you know, a biography or something like that, I might check that out, which I wish they had more of, because you almost always it's fiction, but once in a while it pops up, and I look at it every day just in case, because it's such a good deal, you know, sometimes it's like a dollar, a couple dollars, and it's just like, yeah, of course, I want to learn as much as I possibly can. I'll drop a couple dollars or a few dollars a week or whatever. Sure. So I picked this one up that came out the other day. It was Finding Your Element. And I forget who the author is, but I've been listening to it, and it's really cool. And I love who, I don't know if it's the author who's reading it or if it's somebody else, because sometimes the author does read it, but the person who's reading it, they have like this awesome like English accent, you know, just kind of a proper English accent, but not so proper that, you know, it's like, you know, the royal, I don't know, English accent, I don't know what, it's not like snooty, but it's like, it's definitely like, it's not like, you know, the street style, you know, English accent. I don't know the different areas and whatnot, and how, like, they all relate as far as the accents, but there's definitely different kinds. I know there's, like, Cockney or whatever, which I don't really even know what that means, but I equate that with, like, maybe how if there was an accent for people who lived in trailer homes. I don't know, that might be a totally messed up thing to say, or, like, I'm not saying anything bad about people in trailer homes, so I don't know. I don't have any problem with people who live in trailer homes. My stepfather and brother were living in one, and it was a really nice trailer park area. I've had family, aunts and uncles. I mean, I haven't lived in one at the ever, but, I mean, I would if maybe it seemed like the right situation. But, you know, there's always that stereotype of, like, trailer trash. But anyways, I'm getting off on a thing. So, I just, I don't know. I know there's different kinds of, you know, British accents and stuff like that. Or English accents. And this one seems to be more on the, like, a little bit more on the proper side. The proper. Anyways, I love British accents. I don't know, like, I've always dug it, and they're fun to listen to, and just the way they phrase things is just a little bit different than how we phrase it, and a lot of times it's like more polite, even if it's like more of a street one, a street type of accent, they still have certain ways of talking that's a little more polite, but they can also be super like, I don't know, it's just their humor is just sometimes so like biting, or like even when it's proper, it's like, it's so funny, like, to me. So anyways, so I love the accent, so I could just listen to this just for the accent, but that being said, also Australian accents, and my wife can tell the difference. I can't tell the difference. Sometimes I feel like I can sort of tell the difference. I'm starting to get there. I mean, I've listened to plenty of, Paul Kijiji's podcast maybe I should know the difference, but I love his accent too, but, you know, I don't know. I it's really tough, you know, to know the difference and stuff. So anyways, but yeah, this is a book called Finding Your Element. And, I guess it's like a sequel, I guess, to a book that he wrote called, Your Element or something like that, or Living in Your Element or something like that. I'm not sure. I'll probably end up downloading that. And he's got another book too that's kind of related, I think. But this one was, like, his attempt, because, like, when he wrote the other book, he had a lot of people who dug it and whatnot, and you know, there was obviously a lot of questions, like, how, okay, great, you know, get in your element and stuff, but how do I find what my element is, what's my passion in life, and things like that. And, like, there's all these different questions that he got, and he's like, so this is, like, his book to kind of write a little bit more of a, okay, yeah, the element stuff was cool, now what's some practical ways to find this and figure out where your element is. And I guess it's kind of a, the whole idea behind the book is, it's basically like the whole idea of finding your passion, finding, you know, do what you love, and, you know, it won't seem like you're working or whatever, or the money will follow, all those, like, things that people say. And, it's weird, it's, like, kind of bright out, like, I feel like I need to put on sunglasses, even though it's raining and overcast, like, I'm squinting my eyes a lot. I don't know, try these sunglasses, some crappy sunglasses. I actually bought some, and they're supposed to be coming in the mail, but, I don't know why. I just did because I saw a deal, and I was like, all right, I need sunglasses. It was easier than going to the store, I guess, to get some cheap. I go to, like, Five Below or whatever. I'll grab glass. I always buy cheap glasses because, one, I'm not good at taking care of stuff, so things break, and, two, they're cheap. So, yeah. So these ones really suck, like, super suck. They're all scuffed up, and I can barely see out of them. But they make my eyes feel better. So, anyways, so, yeah, reading this book, or listening to this book, and, really digging it. And it's funny, like, after my whole rant last week, and, I shouldn't say rant, but whatever, like, it was just me talking about kind of almost like a quitting, but not really quitting, just once again shifting my focus, sort of, and actually putting a lot of this art and music stuff into the hobby side of things. Because I need to focus on other things that are more important. And, I don't know, because I need to kind of reevaluate, you know? I don't know, it's funny that I'm listening to this book now, because it's like, you know, this is kind of all about your passion and finding your, finding your element for work and stuff like that. So it's like, and I was talking about how Rabbi Daniel Lappin was talking about, you know, it's not about that. You know, that's not what's important. You need to find work that's useful in the world and do that and fall in love with that, you know, type of thing. So it was like a whole different train of thought that isn't really popular. That's not the way people want to think. That's not the way people... I mean, there's tons of gurus out there telling you to follow your passion, you know, nowadays. But there's a lot of people who are critical of that as well. And so it's funny that I'm, like, reading this book, you know, now about your passion after, you know, kind of getting to a point where I'm thinking maybe the advice from somebody like Rabbi Daniel Lappin is maybe a little more accurate. And, you know, I'm still going a little bit back and forth. I'm not going back on what I was saying, because I think that I am still just going to continue to move forward with getting some stuff right in my life. I think that's kind of the first step. It's hard to know exactly what to talk about because I want to touch on a few different things. But I don't want to forget them either. But basically, what I want to talk about today is, like, the topic will probably, like, the show will probably be called What's the Use? And so I want to talk about some of the things, kind of basically this whole thing about passion versus doing something that is useful to the world is kind of one of those false dichotomies. I think that's the right word. I think it's funny with language, like, people kind of evolve towards language. Like, me saying dichotomy isn't from, you know, having previously looked up the definition and saying, that's a cool word, let me use that. It's from, you know, hearing people say it so many times that I get, you know, within certain contexts that I kind of get the meaning, you know? I think that's interesting how language evolves, even your own personal vocabulary, but also even just learning a language, like, when you're growing up, you know, you don't learn what things are called by looking at a dictionary, you know? That's a good reference if you don't know what something means, but that's not how you learn vocabulary. You learn it by hearing it. At least I do, and it seems like that's how most people, if not everybody, kind of, at least in the beginning, learn, you know, by the context that people, you know, you start to understand, you understand one thing or a couple things, and then you see that somebody's using the same, this other word often within the context of these other things that you do understand, but you don't understand the one word, and I don't know, I think it's just interesting. And that's kind of one of the things they were talking about in this book, too, is, like, the element, Finding Your Element book is the way people learn. It was talking a lot about the different ways people learn and stuff, and just how, you know, going to college and school and stuff, they kind of, the approach is so, like, backwards as far as, like, the way people actually learn, like, they're kind of, I don't know, it's weird because people who go to college, a lot of times, like, for the majority of the time, people don't get a career related to what they went to college for, but does that mean that time was wasted? I don't think so. I think, And this is what I was saying, like, people learn organically, like, it's through a bunch of different experiences and failing and succeeding and doing okay and just trying a bunch of different things that sometimes people find their you know, place in life or element in life. And then it's also, you know, trying to understand who you are and what you have, you know, like, whatever your, like, abilities, just things that you're more apt to gravitate towards and things like that, and, you know, so, but there's things that you might not realize that you could be good at. Like, even stuff that you think you're bad at. Like, math, for instance. A lot of people say they're bad at math, but... And I've kind of suspected this as well. Like, would I have been better at math if I was taught more in the... within the parameters of what... the way I learn better, you know what I mean? I don't feel like the teachers I had for math, and I'm not saying they were bad, but I feel like they didn't show me the potential of math, you know what I mean? And maybe I missed that because I wasn't interested or something, but now that I know, understand some more things about math and how it's really actually super cool. Like, it's amazing. Like, the whole world is made up of math, basically, or it can be at least measured with math. And I don't know, like, when you get down to math principles, certain things work certain ways, you know, and I don't know. There's so much I don't know about it, but it is a fascinating thing to get into, and I feel like if I was kind of shown that, maybe I'd have more interest and maybe I would have learned better with math. You know, it's super useful to know math in so many different areas. And, like, you know, the question that everybody asks, you know, when am I going to ever use this in life? You know, I don't think it was answered. Like, that question was definitely asked in high school. And even the teachers kind of would pose that. But, and maybe I just wasn't paying attention, I don't know, but, or maybe they didn't present it in a way that was interesting to me, but that question didn't seem to be satisfied in my mind. And it's like, now I wish I knew what I knew now and focus more on math. Like, maybe I would have been good at it if I had any interest, but my only interest in math was to get, you know, a C or more, just to pass, is basically, you know, was my interest in math. And it's funny because I actually, sometimes I would do better in math than I would in, like, English or something, because I was naturally, you know, gravitated towards something like English, so I wouldn't try as hard, you know. I just would, like, whatever, I can, all I cared about was passing, because really all I cared about was art and music back then. So if I was kind of naturally okay or good at, like, something like English or whatever, or, which is, I don't even understand what that class even is now, because it's like, why would you have an English class when you're language is English, and or reading, like, it was a reading class, or, like, I don't know, like, obviously you're learning when you're in elementary school, English makes sense, because you're learning grammar and stuff, so that kind of makes sense, and that's what that is. But I don't know, it was all, it's so weird, like, it seems like they don't explain the purpose of these things, you know, when you're in school. And I think knowing the purpose helps, at least for me. It motivates, actually, me. You know, if I know the purpose of something, I'm more motivated to, you know, say, oh, yeah, I do want to, like, even typing class. Like, when I was in school, I remember, like, thinking, like, I took typing class, I think, in freshman year. I took a little bit of typing, and I just was like, I don't want to do this, this is boring, blah, blah, blah. But after I took that, and I went to a bunch of different schools in my freshman year. I went to 3 different schools because we were moving around and whatnot. But, you know, in I think it was maybe in my junior year or sophomore year, I realized that the typing is going to be something I really need to learn. You know, like, it's going to be important to be able to type. I'm going to want that. Especially with the internet becoming something, and I don't know, for some reason I had enough foresight to be like, you know, I better just hunker down and learn this, because I think it's going to be useful. So I did. I took the time, like, I didn't just, like, not do the typing stuff. I made sure that I was learning it, and now I love the fact that I can type, because... And it's weird because I don't use it for a job really so much, but, like, oh, it's just so much easier to not have to, like, do the whole one finger pointing and, you know, making, trying to get the letters right or whatever. Like, I feel bad for people who don't know how to type, you know, because it's a pain in the butt. Like, and people learn how to do it really quick, even just with the 2 pointer fingers. I'm not saying that if that's what you do, that's bad or anything, but it just, it's something that I'm glad I know how to do. And so anyways, but the reason why I brought that up is because I saw a purpose behind it. You know, I knew that it was going to be useful. You know, math, on the other hand, I kind of thought, as long as I can add and subtract and multiply and divide, that's all I'm going to really need, you know. Now I kind of regret that. I kind of wish I understood some more complex, you know, math things. Like, even with knowing your multiplication tables and stuff, with, like, the flashcards and stuff back in school, like, I didn't, like, they want you to know that stuff by heart, and To this day, I still kind of count on my fingers and stuff, and I don't know some of those things by heart. You know, I know up to, like, you know, four times, you know, multiplication tables, and then after that, I don't remember, like, a lot of stuff, but, I mean, it would have been a little more useful in some of the stuff I do at work. But even so, like, it just would have been nice to, like, there's a lot of little things like that that I just kind of missed out because I didn't care or whatever, I just wanted to pass. Like, I don't know the states and stuff and the, I don't know, of, like, America, and, like, that was something we were supposed to learn. My wife knows it, and her sister knows it and stuff, and, like, they know it pretty well. They had, like, a song and stuff that they learned it with and stuff, but I just, another thing I just didn't care about her. And history, like, history is such an interesting subject, you know, and there's so much usefulness to understanding history. And it was one of the, it was probably the most boring class I had in high school, you know, because they, you know, they just give you facts, they tell you to memorize those facts, and then they tell you to tell them back the facts on a test. You know, and it's like, so, it's so separated from anything that's interesting, like, I don't know, but when I really started to get, the thing that really got me interested in history was my English class, because we read the book Night by Elie Wiesel, which I talked about, and there was some other books that were, like, about Japan when, like, you know, the bombs were dropped on them and stuff, and those things, actually, I was like, now I'm learning history, like, this is crazy, like, you know, just learning facts about that stuff, it doesn't register, you know, oh, this many million people died or whatever, or these people were, you know, you don't really get much from that. It's just like, it's throughout all of history, things like that happen, so you kind of don't even think, like, oh, that's crazy. Like, a fact doesn't register to me on the impact of what really happened, you know. But when you read an account of somebody who's gone through it or been there to journal it or whatever, that's a whole different thing, you know. So that if I learned history that way, I think, you know, it would have been more interesting, and I probably would have learned the facts a lot easier because there was a interesting context around it, you know. So context is a big deal. I learned that just by reading the Bible. It's a big principle, you know, when reading the Bible. Like, people always think, oh, well, this contradicts that, but a lot of times, you know, people are taking stuff out of context. And also just, you know, there's a lot of weird things that people teach, like even, you know, stuff like KKK and stuff, like they took excerpts out of the Bible and were trying to say racism was what it was because of certain things it says in the Bible, but they totally took it way out of context. Like, the scripture doesn't mean what they took from it, you know? So, context is everything. It's very important. I first learned that concept by just digging into the Bible and reading things about how to read the Bible correctly and things like that, and getting the most out of it. It's weird that I learned, like, why didn't I learn that in school? You know what I mean? Like, it's such a big principle in, like, everything in life. Like, why doesn't school teach you the important things? Like, it boggles my mind. Like, why do they lie to you in school? Like, I'm going to get in a tangent, but, like, you know, the whole stuff with, like, the Indians and, like, American history and stuff, it's like, why do they teach that stuff? That's not even true. You know, like the Christopher Columbus, like, you grew up thinking this is like a fun, you know, thing, and you do plays and stuff and whatnot, and come to find out, these are, like, horrible things that happened, and, like, some things probably were good here and there for different things, but the reality versus what we're taught in school is just, like, so different. Like, maybe they should, if they don't want to teach the scary things when you're little, maybe they shouldn't teach any history until you get to a certain age where it's, you know, you can handle some of it. I don't know, like, is it, I don't know. It just boggles my mind, like, why, and I guess it boggles a lot of people's minds because education is obviously a big issue, and there's debates and political things around it and this and that, so blah, blah, blah. Anyways, so, reading this book, Elements, getting into your element, basically. Basically, what I'm coming to realize, I think, is that it isn't, yeah, I was saying false dichotomy, like, it's a false dichotomy to put, like, following your passion versus finding work and just learning to love it. Like, there's probably a better way to say that, but that's, like, a false thing. Like, it's not, it doesn't have to necessarily be either or. It can be both, you know? I think passion is part of the process of finding what you should do. And it's possible that you could have more than one passion, or many passions. It's possible that some of them aren't worth trying to make a living at, and some of them are. It's possible that what you think is your passion maybe isn't, you know, your most strong passion. It's possible that you could find a way to make a living off of something that's maybe not your biggest passion, you know, but it's still a passion and interest. Or maybe, you know, what is it? It's, I think, the idea of following your passion or doing what you love is a much more complicated, or I shouldn't say complicated, but complex issue than we often give it credit for, or whatever. Like, it should be, it's not like there's no, like, saying that can kind of round out exactly everything you should understand and know about the idea of doing what you love. You know, do what you love and the money will follow. Like, that is, in some ways, that is some of the most crippling advice ever. But in other ways, it's the most freeing advice ever. And depending on what kind of person you are, it might be revolutionary, you know? If you're the type of person who is very, I guess, pragmatic, or you just, like, you will only do what makes sense and works, you know, and you don't care about your passion or doing that, like, you just want to do what works and stuff like that, but you're kind of feeling stuck and having a hard time, you know, maybe it's because you haven't put enough of that passion part in there. And once you it dawns on you to try to do something you enjoy a little bit more than just something that makes money, you find out that this is a revolutionary thing and it becomes something that causes you to have great success. But maybe you're someone like me who all you do is follow passions, all kinds of, you have so many passions and, you know, you're just trying to do all the stuff, but you can't figure out how to make any of it work. So to me, right now, doing some of the more practical stuff is becoming more of the revolutionary type of thing within my life, you know. So you know, I think it could be both. And one of the keys that I really got from Daniel Appin's book was that the thing that you need to do and focus on is creating value in this world. Because when you create value, people will pay you for it. Like, there's all kinds of different, and there's so many different ways to do that. You know, it's crazy. So, you know, you need to be useful to the world. Find ways to give in certain ways that, you know, cause people to give you money. You know, they would be, are more than happy to give you some of their hard-earned money if it's going to make their life better, you know? If they're going to buy a product from you or, you know, get a service from you that is going to help them in a certain way, you know? And, I mean, you just go to a grocery store, and if you really break it down, or like any store, maybe not just grocery, like Walmart or whatever store you like to go to get stuff you need, you know, and if you really break down like every little thing, you can see all that stuff that you buy provides value to you and makes your life easier and is worthy of you giving some of your hard-earned money towards. And, I mean, even down to, like, crazy stuff, you know, simple stuff like toilet paper or whatever, paper towels or whatever, like, you know, you could easily break down why you would rather buy paper towels than start, I mean, toilet paper than start, you know, getting leaves from the backyard or whatever, you know what I mean? There's a big reason why you'd rather do that. And those people make your lives better, you know? People go even further with that, you know? And this is, like, such a crashed example, but it makes sense. But people will get, like, the baby wipe type of stuff, and they'll use that for themselves as well. And that's even more, like, you might have to pay a little more for that, but you get more value out of it, you know? And it depends on how much value you want and how much you're willing to put the money you're willing to put down and, you know, how much you can afford and stuff like that. And there's all kinds of other stuff. I mean, toothbrushes, it's a lot, you know, easier to clean your teeth with a toothbrush than probably other ways that people have tried to clean their teeth, you know? a good example is these new toothpick / dental floss things, you know, where they, it's like, it holds the like, they're little individual toothpicks with, like, brackets or whatever that hold the dental floss. Because that's so hard. Like, you have to get behind and in front with a piece of, you know, string or whatever to floss your teeth. And your hand is bigger than your mouth. So you have to use your fingers. And it's always been a pain in the butt for me to try to do that. I've hated it. And now we have, like, these little toothpick things. And they're cheap, you know, they're cheap enough. And I definitely floss my teeth a lot more now that they've invented those things, you know. So I will pay money for that because they say that flossing your teeth is a good thing to do. And, you know, not just for your teeth, but also there's studies, I guess, that, you know, having all that stuff in your teeth or whatever, or, like, if you don't floss, it could actually cause, like, heart disease and stuff like that. I haven't looked into that to understand how that all happens, but that's what they say. That's what the doctors say. Is it true? I don't know. I think it is. Maybe I'm just being fed a line. But, anyways, if it is true, that's some great value, isn't it? You know? And somebody has made my life better, you know, by providing this product, and I'm happy to give them some dollars, some coin for that, you know. So you know, providing value in the world, what's the use? And that's really the question, isn't it? Like, as far as, like, this art stuff and music stuff, like, and I'm not saying there's no use for art or anything like that. We've talked about that, and, but it is a little more of a struggle for me to understand what the use is of art. And, you know, the thing is there's also, you know, supply and demand issues too, you know, and it's weird. I don't hear, you know, these, all these different marketing gurus and whatever. I don't actually hear them talk about supply and demand very much. Which I know I've heard it, you know, at times, and it does make a lot of sense. So, but you know, the demand for art versus the supply, I mean, everybody and their mother makes art, you know, and there's a lot of good stuff and a lot of not so good stuff, but you know, there's definitely enough good stuff out there so that the supply is, the demand, you know, is really not huge. And the supply is more, like, especially with comics, like, everybody wants to make comics, but not that many people out there are trying to buy comics, or if they are, they're only buying, you know, the ones that are sanctioned by the big names, Marvel and DC. So I gotta pause it here for a sec. So yeah, that whole idea of supply and demand, big deal. And another thing that, you know, Rabbi Daniel Appin was talking about, that it's just a different word for it, I guess. Or the strategy, you know, for finding certain things is, you know, the supply, the demand, I mean, for comics, indie comics, maybe isn't very high. I mean, and if there is a big demand, you know, there's plenty, there's so much good stuff out there to be had, you know. You know, IDW, Image Comics, I mean, Image Comics is, they have grown from just being, like, a few artists who do some titles and they're independent, to just putting out an array of so many different artists and so many different, you know, subjects, and, like, they take on so much nowadays, but, you know, as a company, they're doing decent, but the individual artists, there's a lot of them who, you know, they're not really hired by Image Comics. They do a book and Image puts it out, but they still kind of have to put it out themselves. And, you know, you're not guaranteed to make a lot of money, really. A lot of people work really hard and don't make really anything, even when they put stuff out through Image Comics. There are some people who do well, you know, but even for them, it was really tough to get those first, you know, 5 books out or whatever, or more, 5 to 10 books. You know, if you got to 10, you've had a successful run, and you probably spent a ton of energy and work, and probably didn't make a living wage yet. I mean, this is just sort of an assumption, but off of stuff I've heard, and may not be, you know, applicable to every single person who's done stuff there or whatever. I mean, if you're Rob Liefeld, you're making a fortune off of Image Comics stuff, that off of your Extreme line, you know. I'm sure he's making tons of money now, not as much as he made in the 90s, but still, you know, he doesn't have to do much but revitalize old titles that in some of them were just really, I mean, for the majority, they were kind of crappy as far as writing and art. But, you know, at one point it was high demand, you know, but not so much anymore. So anyways, I don't want to get on a Rob Liefeld rant because, you know, who hasn't? So, just for anybody who, if you happen to be new, I'm not disparaging the guy because I personally like his stuff and have been very much inspired by him. Even though there's a lot of crap he and his crew has put out, for some reason, I got on the bandwagon when I was young. I mean, he was one of the people who first influenced me in comics, and there's a lot of, it's like a love-hate relationship. There's so many things that I've really dug about what he says, what he does, and there's so many things that have pissed me off, too, so it is what it is. Anyways, I just wanted to throw that out there, though, because if you haven't listened, you know, before to my other rants on what's up with my thoughts on him and stuff, I didn't want you to think that I totally hating on him either, so anyways. So, supply and demand. Oh, so what I wanted to get to was, you know, the idea of specialization is kind of a strategy, you know. But, you know, the idea of providing value, like, what is the use of comic books, or what is the use of art, you know, and is there really that many people out there who are interested? Well, the one thing that people have tended to talk about who are in these circles of creators like myself and, you know, all you guys pretty much who are in this audience or in that circle is the idea of, like, the thousand true fans or whatever, or just in general building an audience, you know, for your stuff. And I think that is probably our best bet, you know, is to try going for something like that. Well, it's not the only thing that you could do, but it's one of our best bets. It's crazy driving through this one section in Massachusetts right now. There's like a huge hill on the left of me, and there's just trees like on the ground, and you could tell this is part of where the hurricane went through, or the tornado went through, because it's like this huge hill, there's all these trees on the ground, but you could see like they're like cut in half, these trees, and they're not cut by saws, you know, it's obvious that they were just like torn. Like this area must have been so messed up when that tornado went through. Like, it must have been crazy trying to clean this up. Really crazy. Anyways, that was like a couple years ago. So, I don't know. It's kind of cool, kind of interesting to see, but it sucked. You know, some people, it's crazy, like, during that tornado, like, it was really devastating. Like, I saw a lot of damage. It's crazy. Luckily, it didn't hit my area, but it was like 10 minutes up the road, you know? But, and my mom, it was like right near her, but it was like literally like a mile, maybe not even a mile away from her where all the damage happened, but she wasn't barely touched by it, you know? It's crazy. But, forgot where I was going with that. I did have a little bit of a point to that tangent. I don't know. It was crazy, but I'm glad I didn't get hit by it, and the damage was crazy. So, yeah. My point was that I was going to just say that, you know, with these natural disasters, luckily, there's been a lot that have happened around me, and even we got hit by the snowstorm that was crazy, like in October, one time, and that like caused a lot of damage, and we had no power for a couple weeks. But it's crazy, like, even in all those things, like, usually the reports are that only one person or maybe three people died or were injured. You know, people just kind of huddle in their houses, and as long as it's not, like one of these crazy hurricanes that uplifts houses, you know, a lot of times people are relatively safe, you know, not as many people die as you would think, you know. I'm not, you know, I guess I've been fortunate in that, you know, and hopefully that continues, you know, with the stuff that happens around here, but, you know, there obviously has been even more devastational things that have happened where tons of people have been wiped out at once, and, you know, that sucks, and my heart always goes out to those people. So anyways, back to what we were talking about. So the idea of specialization is actually a very important idea, and it happens in very simple, practical things that we take for granted. You know, like I was talking about the toilet paper before, but that's kind of how it all, like, in the beginning, and I described this a lot last week, so I won't belabor it, but I will go over it again a little bit, is, you know, in the beginning, you know, people would live on whatever plot of land they could gather for themselves or whatever, and they'd have to basically do everything, you know, from building their house, I mean, from the beginning, I mean, eventually you probably inherit a house, I don't know, or you live in a cave or whatever, whatever the circumstance was at different times, but, you know, in the primitive sense, people have to do everything. You know, they have to go get their food, they have to cook it, they have to make their own clothes, they have to, you know, find their own ways of finding water, bathing, and just providing all the essentials of just living. And it's not fun, you know. It's, a lot of times it's glamorized and stuff, as that was the simple life, but imagine having to do that and having no time for anything more than that, like, for your whole life. It's kind of almost like a slavish existence, you know. It's not fun, and the reason why we have all these conveniences now is because we realize that, and we've built so many things that we just totally, you know, we take for granted, and it's fine, you know, that's cool that we are able to live in a time where we take stuff for granted, you know. But, you know, travel was a big issue. Getting information from one area to the other area took forever, you know. And, you know, what we relied on most of the time was horses, you know. And then we made buggies, which made it a little bit easier to move more stuff or more people, you know, at once. But still, you know, basically we still needed the horses, and that took four horses or something to pull something like that, or, you know, then you get the four horsepower thing for engines for cars and all that stuff, and we ended up starting to make cars, and that made life a lot more easy, you know. And eventually we learned how to create steel, you know, which was manufactured from different elements or whatever. And, you know, we didn't always have steel, but steel revolutionized the way things happen and the way we build things, and gave us stronger structures. We can build bridges, build bigger buildings, you know, and there's just so many things. Electricity, I mean, wasn't that long ago that we didn't have electricity. We didn't know how to harness it, you know. But now we do, and it makes life a lot easier, you know. Computers, obviously, is what has been the new thing, and internet. Things are super fast and super easy now, you know. And we're blessed to be in that environment, you know. For the most of us are, you know. Or, I don't know, maybe not most of us, but a lot of us in the world are. And hopefully everybody else will be too eventually, you know. It enriches our lives so we can focus on the things that are more important in life, actually, you know. Just fulfilling our basic needs is not, you know, it's it's not necessarily the greatest thing. Like, there's more to life than that, you know, but there isn't more to life than that if all you can do, if the only opportunity you have is to fulfill those basic needs. So anyways, the whole idea of that was, you know, the reason why trying to do everything yourself, you know, the reason why we have a system of trade and then eventually of money is because doing everything yourself kind of sucks, you know? So, you know, we learn how to specialize in certain things. Well, this guy, you know, farms chickens, so we have chicken to eat and we have eggs to eat. You know, this guy, you know, knows how to deal with iron and stuff like that, and they can make, like, horseshoes and whatever else you need for iron, pans, and I don't know, all kinds of different things that, you know, they, so you can trade your chickens with their iron or whatever, because they need to eat and you need tools to do certain things, you know, so whatever, you know. So you start to specialize in one thing, and so not only does it make life easier because certain things are being done for you and now you can trade, but because people are specializing in things, they're doing it better, you know. Before, you had to do all that stuff, so you just, on the bare minimum, you could just eke out what you needed, you know, but now you can pay somebody else to make your clothes or something like that, you know. So where before, you know, you barely could clothe yourself because you're not really good at that, you know. So, and then, you know, the clothing gets more sophisticated, the, you know, the things progress, you know, because there's specialization and people are discovering other new ways to combine different things. And so specialization, just on a basic level, is good, you know, it's really good and helpful and makes things easier for all of us and enriches all of our lives. So, and not only that, but there becomes a demand once people figure out, you know, what the use is of whatever it is you're specializing in, or the desire, even, it's a need or a want that you're trying to hit. But, and it's weird because you can actually make a lot more money providing what people want than providing what people need. But it's hard to understand where the how to market that value of what people want. It's a lot easier to know how to market the value of what people need. So, you know, like, I worked in the fire sprinkler industry, you know, on the bottom level. I work in a warehouse and I drive and deliver supplies and stuff like that. So that's a need. It's not really a want, you know. There's codes where certain kind of buildings, you have to have a fire sprinkler system, so that if, obviously, in case of a fire, you know, it protects, it saves lives, which is awesome. It's a need, but nobody desires, you know, oh, I'm going to have, like, this really exotic, like, fire sprinkler system. Like, they just want to get it done and make sure, you know, people are safe. You know, obviously, they desire to be safe. But nobody desires it, because if somehow something happens and sets off the fire alarm, and maybe it was by accident, you know, and the sprinklers go off, now you have to deal with a lot of water damage that's very expensive to fix, you know, and sometimes to the point where the water damage destroys the property and you have to totally, like, rebuild, you know. So nobody really wants that fire system to ever go off, you know. So it's kind of like, so you can market that, you know, because first of all, there's codes. People, if they don't have to, won't put a fire sprinkler system in their building, you know. Or maybe some people try to get away with not having one, you know. I'm sure that happens, you know. because it's expensive, you know? So, in one way, it's easy to market that because they know they have to do it. So, it's like, it's a need. So, you know, it's easy for us to kind of make money in one sense because we need, you know, we know there's a need and there's no way people can get around that need. So, we supply that need and people, you know, put the stuff in the buildings and blah, blah, blah. But when it's a want, you can kind of, I don't know, like donuts or something, you know, nobody needs donuts, but people want donuts, and there's a lot of companies out there, specifically one, that provides donuts for people, you know, but yeah, donuts are relatively cheap, but I mean, how much money has been made off of donuts, you know? And obviously, one of the biggest draws towards, you know, something like Dunkin' Donuts is coffee. You know, people kind of need coffee, so they kind of provide the need and the want, you know? But then, you know, eventually people kind of wanted something more than your average donut shop, you know? So, I mean, it was kind of created, though, like, somebody had the idea to create a Starbucks, you know, which provides a whole different experience. It's almost like a more sophisticated way, you know, and it provides actually an emotional need more than anything. That people, you know, some people would rather have like a comfy, cozy place to go where they can sit, drink their coffee. Some people like to order something that sounds exotic and fancy. You know, so, I don't know, there's different psychology in going to a Starbucks and getting your coffee and going to a Dunkin' Donuts and getting your coffee. I personally get my coffee at McDonald's because they do sell Newman's Own, you know, and I like that coffee. You know, I like it. I've never really liked Dunkin' Donuts coffee. Starbucks is cool, but they don't usually have a drive-thru. So there's a convenience issue there, you know, so I like to just go to the drive-thru, grab my coffee at McDonald's. I like Newman's Own, and it's good. And sometimes I get a sandwich, too, you know. So they got me there, you know. They hit my needs and wants pretty good, where other places might not have. So, actually, I think Starbucks sometimes does have drive-thrus, but a lot of times they don't. Either way, I don't... You know, they're a little more expensive, and I'm the type of person who gets confused. I'm a simple, like, meat and potatoes, t-shirt, jeans-wearing guy, you know? So, like, they have, like, the mocha frappa. I always used to make jokes, like, a mocha frappa, chapa, you know, what the heck are these things even? Like, they're not even in English, like, what is this stuff? But, you know, eventually my wife was into them, and, you know, I tried a couple things, and I liked them, and so once in a while for, like, almost like a novelty type of thing, I'll go get something from there, because, you know, it tastes good, but I'm always wondering if there's actually caffeine in it, because I'm in it for the caffeine, you know, so I'm not sure what has caffeine, and sometimes I ask them, and they don't even know, the baristas, but I do like the environment, and I have gone there just to sit and hang out and maybe work on something, because I like the idea of working, like, not at home and around people sometimes too, you know, if I'm too much in the studio or whatever. So there's that. So there's a lot of different draws for different things, and they supply different needs and stuff. So the point is, really what I'm getting to, though, is that, you know, what's the use for our art, you know, and our music, like, and whatever else we create. Like, if your desire is to be a comic book artist and you want to, you know, just do superheroes, like, everybody and their mom wants to do superheroes, like, that's, and there's our, that market's already being satisfied pretty darn well, you know. And that's kind of what I want to do, you know? And it's so hard to make a comic, and the rewards are so little. And I, that doesn't mean I don't want to still do it, but I don't have a lot of hopes for financial gain, you know, in that arena. But if you are somebody who wants to specialize in something, maybe even within the superhero realm, it's the people who can find some kind of niche or specialization that can provide something that people are really into right now, that might do well, you know. Or maybe you just do something that's so unique that, you know, people can catch on. And a lot of times the way artists have found a way to do this specialization or niching has been with style. So if you have a consistent, unique style to something, and, you know, you can maybe find a market for that, you know. If you're like me, I mean, I kind of have a style if I really focus on it, but I'm too, like, all over the place. I like to try different styles, you know what I mean? So, and that goes with all my artistic creations. It's kind of been a crippling thing for me, you know? I think what my style would be if I was focusing on comics and stuff is, like, an underground, like, Robert Crumb type of style, but with superheroes. That's probably my best, like, chance for niching out in this genre of comics and stuff. Because that's kind of how I approach Glyph. But at the same time, I grew up on, you know, crazy muscles and detail, you know, that you'd see by somebody like Jonathan Richter or something, you know. But who doesn't do that? Like, that's been done to crazy amounts, and so many people do it so much better than I can even come close. I can't even come close to. So, I don't know. I guess it's just not enjoy. There's just so much work, more work I have to do to get to a level where I can kind of do that in a way that's satisfying. And the anatomy has to be more on point and things like that. So, I don't know. It's tough for me. I can't, that's not really a niche anymore. It's kind of been satisfied. So somebody like Jim Mahfood has made a career for himself because he does such a stylized form of comics, and he kind of has that underground type of thing, but in his own way, and he just has such a unique style, sort of. It's kind of a graffiti type thing going on, and a lot of more 2D type of shape stuff going on, and more design stuff going on, less anatomy, like more cartoony, but kind of a gritty feel to it, and not a lot of people really are doing that, although stuff like that is becoming more popular and has, you know, but it's not mainstream popular necessarily. People still want their Jim Lee, you know, clones for the superhero stuff a lot. But he's made a way for himself with that. And how well is he doing financially? I don't know. I asked him for a quote one time, and he, for an album cover, and I think he quoted me, I think, like $800 or $900, and he said he was giving me a discount because I'm boys with some of his friends and stuff, and whatever. I mean, I was like, that sounds like a great price. I wish I had the money for it, you know. I was going to maybe do a Kickstarter for it. But I didn't even do that album, so whatever, blah, blah, blah. I mean, I still have those tracks. Maybe I'll still end up doing it, who knows. But it's hard to, like, pay him when I can make my own cover, you know. I don't know. But I'd like to anyways. I think I'd love to, like, pay people to do stuff even if I can do it, you know. That's kind of something I'm really interested in trying, but there, I have other steps to take before I can get to that point where I can make enough money to do that kind of thing, you know. So, But I think it's important, actually, to pay people to do some of this stuff. Even if you can do it, sometimes it's better for you to focus on your strengths and let other people do other things. And when you're doing that, you're, in a small way, creating jobs. You're creating work for other people. And that's reciprocal, you know, like, you're helping the industry, and that will come back to you, I believe. You know, if you think of karma or whatever, however you think about it, I just think that, you know, that's the law of God, you know, that when you give, you get, you know, and you get more than you give, you know, and that's one way of doing that. There's many other ways. There's just simply giving to give and not thinking of any kind of return. I mean, that's pretty much what you should always really do, but this is more of a trade-based kind of giving, but I think it still applies. So anyways, so specialization is a big deal. And just finding something, like, I have a desire to be more useful, you know what I mean? Like, for some reason, just doing art isn't quenching that, you know? Or I haven't found my way yet with art and music. And that's kind of why doing the beat stuff was kind of interesting to me, because I'm fulfilling a need, you know, for somebody instead of just a desire for somebody. So the need is, you know, rappers want to make their music, they need beats, you know. They can't do it without the beats. A lot of rappers end up making their own beats, or, you know, they have, like, a group they work with, and there's a beat maker within the group. So, in some ways, you know, it's another thing where the demand, the supply is much greater than the demand, so it's, again, hard to still make money with that, but it's possible. And the way you're able to make money with that is by providing a lot of other value besides beats. Some for free, some for fee. And that's why, you know, I've been doing all these artist advantage videos and stuff like that. That's providing value, you know, helping them with their career as well. And then they get to know, like, and trust you. And eventually they will have a project going, and they'll be like, maybe I don't buy beats usually, but this time I'm going to, because this guy's been so awesome to me. Now my mind's opened up more to possibly buying a beat from this guy, because he's helped me in so many other ways, you know. So you're building that rapport, and you can do this with anything, you know, but it's cool that there is a desire and a need attached to it. So that's kind of interesting to me, and that's kind of what inspired me to get into beats again and trying to sell beats again. But I don't know if my heart's 100% in it. It's really weird. I'm still trying to find my way with all this stuff, you know. It's not been an easy path to figure this stuff out. So, but learning all this stuff while learning how to do this business, I've learned a ton more, like, just all around about business and life, and I think doing this departure that I've been doing with the beats has been a good thing, even if it's just me learning a lot more about a lot of different things, because you know, it's just been helpful. So that's cool. And I don't know, I'm just continuing, and the thing that I'm focusing on right now is I'm letting all that stuff be a hobby for a little while, and I'm focusing on some of the foundational things I need to focus on, which is increasing my wife and I's quality of life, because we've been living at such a base level for so long, It's time, and some of the financial stresses aren't as much there now. So it's time. This is the time where I have a chance to start building a little bit instead of just living on a base level. I'm sick of living on that base level and being a needy person, you know, by default, you know. So I'm trying to get my finances in order. I'm trying to build upon what we have. And, you know, there's a lot of things that we need that we live without because we haven't had the money that I'm hoping to change, you know, just in, even in little things like getting some furniture, maybe painting a couple rooms in our house, you know, little things. Just there's tons of stuff. My wife needs glasses, which is more a need than a want, but she's been without a good prescription of glasses for a long time. It's just like she needs that, you know, and so we're going to get that soon. Just the our diet, maybe increasing on organic food and decreasing on processed food would be great. We need to lose, both of us need to lose some weight. Just a lot of these things, you know. And those things are becoming really important to me. I realized that to do this business stuff right and this art stuff right, you need a balance of doing a lot of things right within your life. So I'm trying to focus on that stuff. And the money thing is a big deal. Like, I want to get a budget down and, you know, and start saving money correctly and eventually start investing money. And I want to save money because I want to have an emergency money for, like, car troubles and things like that. Just all that stuff. So, you know, that's where I'm at. Still the same as what I was talking about last week, but, probably close out the podcast here. Hopefully you got something from that. It was mostly just, you know, trying to find usefulness in a way. I really want to make a business out of something. I don't know what, but I want to do it. And the key really to doing that is becoming a use, providing something that's useful and hitting a deep enough desire, like a deep enough want and or need. And helping people out in that arena. So I'm not sure what that is yet, but it might even be a job in the form of a job. I'm not sure. But anyways, I hope you guys got something out of this that was helpful. And thank you for listening. You guys are awesome. And I will talk to you again on the next Escape Artist podcast next week. Later.